This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Joining me on the show today via Zoom are my guests, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Chu Lee Sien, a parent. And today we'll be discussing what are children reading in books and how to talk to them about it, especially if they come across certain themes that may be problematic or even considered inappropriate, quote unquote. Now, this came about because back in March, it was reported that 6 Dr. Seuss books will cease publication because they contained racist themes. And of course, this is not the first instance of something like that happening. And off and on as well, parents or educators will come across something in children's books that, they may deem themselves problematic. So what should parents do when this happens? Should we shield children from such content, or should we talk to them about it? And if we do, how do we go about it? So that's what I hope Dr. Rajini and Lee Sien will be able to share with us today. How are the both of you today?
Good, thank you.
Yes, and if you have any questions or thoughts you'd like to share with us, if you're a parent or educator, you can call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. And to start with, perhaps, I want to start with Lee Sien, just to get a parent's perspective right off the bat. When it came to your kids, at what age did you start them off with reading as a habit? And at what age did you let them start choosing their own books?
Actually, I started reading to my kids at a very young age, probably when they were about 8 to 12 months. We started having a habit where we read at bedtime. We have a bedtime, even we continue to this day, we choose about 2 or 3 books together usually, and then we read them at bedtime for about 15 to sometimes half an hour if the book is very engaging. So that's how I started with my children. A lot of people say you should read to children in virtual, but I didn't do that.
But 8 to 12 months sounds very early. Your children are in primary age now, am I right?
Yes, they are going to turn 8 in June.
Yes. I guess at 8, they've already got their own minds. They do what they want to do. Are they starting to choose their own reading material as well?
Yes, they are. Usually, sometimes they choose things that are driven by some things they watch and also things they play, on games and things like that. They have some limited screen time, so they tend to be influenced by that, and also by influenced by what their friends are reading as well. So usually, the current favorites are things like anything to do with Minecraft, Dogman, the Dogman series, because he started reading through comics. And then also the Treehouse series, the 13 story, all the multiples of 13. And then my daughter, she started off liking all those things related to the Frozen, a lot of things related to movies that she watches. 101 Dalmatians, she will want the book version of it, because she loves books so much. She loves books more than toys and other things. But if she watches a movie, she wants me to buy the book for her, even though, I'm not really a big fan of this like movie-related book came from the movie thing. But it's okay, I get it for her because I feel it's okay. Anything, I try not to censor it too much. Anything that gets her started liking books, it's okay for me. So yeah, that's what happens. But I try to balance out, just like their diet. Sometimes you eat junk food, but you eat good food. So sometimes I try to balance out with certain books that I think they should be reading. I try to gently introduce it.
Yeah, and we'll get into that later as to what, as a parent, what do you think they should be reading as opposed to, what they choose for themselves. But what do you think, Dr. Rajini? The idea that the child loves reading so much that they have an opinion and they have an interest in choosing what they want to read. What does that say to you?
I think that goes with anything, isn't it? The toys they choose. As long as we, at a younger age have exposed them enough to choices, you always find that children will eventually pick things that they like. Sometimes it's not, you know, you'd be surprised as they get older. It's nothing to do with the influence that we have had. Mm-hmm. When they're in the preschool age, quite often they still rely on us parents to sort of make sense of the world, give them choices, present to them things. But once they get to school age especially, or the later preschool age, the sort of 5 to 7 and onwards, you find that actually friends and peers start to, and even teachers start to influence them in terms of what they want to read, what they want to watch, what they want to play even. So I think, you know, same goes for books as well.
And Lisian, you know, what we particularly want to discuss today is when some content in children's reading material may be deemed inappropriate. Now, that's, of course, very subjective. It's very culturally subjective as well as being individually subjective. But as a parent, what have you come across anything in children's books that you consider either inappropriate or perhaps needs a bit more context, needs for you to talk to your kids about it?
Of course, racial stereotypes, I come across a lot of them, especially in old books. And I cannot fault it because, you know, it was created in an era where people are not so diverse. Maybe they're not so conscious of diversity and inclusiveness. So those kind of where they sometimes they draw the character Chinese, you know, Chinese have slanty eyes or sometimes, very... You know, if you remember last time when we were reading Enid Blyton, they have all these things like the Gollywog series. No, I went home the other day and I found my old copy, you know, and I was thinking, wow, at that time when I was reading it, I thought nothing of it and my parents thought nothing of it. But of course, now everybody will say, oh, you know, it's very racist and these pictures. So that kind of thing I've come across. And also, I feel that some books, maybe they deal... They're not books that my children, but I've come across some books that are unnecessarily mature in content, not age appropriate, and also too violent. A lot of unnecessary violence that is included in the books. I feel like it's not necessary for children to. It can be dealt with in a more subtle manner. A good book would deal with it in a good way. So those are the kind of things that I have come across.
Okay, just very quickly, what do you mean by dealing with it in a good way, as opposed to, I guess, what you saw?
I think a good picture book would deal with a very difficult and sensitive topic with pictures that are more metaphorical or suggestive rather than outright in your face kind of violence. Or like, for example, the book I have, one book called The Journey by Francesca Sana on refugees, you know, and this, they talk about how their father was taken away. So suddenly, you know, it's all black and then they show a pair of glasses. It's suggestive, but it's not, it's still a bit frightening for the child to consider that idea of the father being taken away for whatever reason or maybe something happened to him. But they don't show, like, you know, the kind of violence that you would actually show in those kind of scenes that you see on TV or the news with real graphical images.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dr. Rajini, how do we try to understand it from the perspective of a child through their different ages, right? If we could look at their different levels of development and maturity, and then we try to see how then as parents, we know at what level they are and whether they're able to process certain content.
Yeah, I think as a parent, I always believe that you are the best gauge of what your child understands and what your child is able to comprehend. And the best way to look at that first is how they deal with the real world, you know, and how they perceive the way things happen in the real world. Let's just take, for example, mummy's going to have a baby. Yeah. Mm. Where does that baby come from? Yeah. Mm. Now, if you're dealing with an 18-month-old, they don't really want to know where that baby has come from. They haven't got that curiosity to think that far ahead or to think abstractly. In fact, if you look at an 18-month-old and you tell them that mommy's got a baby in her tummy, that 18-month-old may actually think that even in his tummy, there is a baby. Because he thinks that whatever he sees in other people sort of reflects on him. When you talk about a three-year-old, that sort of abstract thinking has come in, and you can tell that from their play. So if you look at an 18-month-old, their pretend play is very much related to what happens to them. So you feed them, you pat them to go to sleep, and you see them do that with their dolls or their stuffed toys or their Ultramans. But when you take a three-year-old, that three-year-old's level of play has, if it has developed as per normal, that three-year-old starts to bring in other roles, imagination into their play. So now that doll is going to be my friend. This other doll is going to be me. This is going to be my sister. So, you know, they start to understand slightly more abstract topics. So when you talk to them about the fact that mommy has a baby, but in your tummy there's no baby, they start to understand that. But then they want to start to know why, but maybe how you would explain how that baby comes is going to be different to how you explain it, say, to a six-year-old who has a deeper understanding about how the body works, etc., and then compared to a nine-year-old or a 13-year-old. So, you know, it changes as that child's cognitive abilities sort of move on. And it's reflected in their play. It's reflected in how they perceive and act towards things and people around them.
All right. So then I'm still curious to find out then how do we extend that to, you know, when it comes to choices of books and talking to your children in a constructive manner about some things that they may come across that they may be troubled by, or as parents ourselves, we are often the ones who are troubled by it. And then, you know, to the extent of perhaps saying you can't read this, or, you know, you're not allowed to. So, you know, I also want to find out, are such approaches, you know, useful at all, or is there going to be a risk of doing something like that? So I'm speaking to consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan and Chu Lee Sien, a parent. We're discussing how to talk to children about what they read in books, especially when some of the content may be deemed inappropriate or problematic. So we'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. My guests today are consultant developmental pediatrician, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, and Chu Lee Sien, a parent. We're discussing what are children reading in books, and more importantly, how to talk to them about it, how to ensure that they are, the content is age appropriate, and that they are able to process what they read, especially if some of the themes or values may be problematic. And really, that's, as I said earlier, and Lee Sien, you've already sort of chimed in to share a bit of what you may find to be, you know, perhaps in age, in a, not age appropriate, like books that are overly violent, books that depict a certain racial stereotypes, for instance, especially books that had been published, you know, quite a while back. So, Dr. Rajini, taking on from what you said about children's development and ability to process, you know, it will develop from age to age, and it depends on each individual child as well. Then how do we address the issue of, you know, selecting books for them or helping them to select books, or when they come across books on their own, perhaps influenced by friends or what they see in the media, that don't fall in line with our values of what we deem to be child-friendly? How do we deal with that then, Dr. Rajini?
I mean, I think this problem probably will not arise when we're talking about preschool children, am I right? Because quite, I mean, I would hope not, because it, quite often in the preschool years, like I said, it is the duty of a parent to still be there to guide their child about what's right, what's wrong, what's acceptable culturally for that family, what's acceptable probably in the society they live in, and how we behave. We are still models for our children. When we get into the school age, it's going to be harder it gets harder and harder to start to influence our children. And to be fair, I think it's often very healthy to have open discussions with children. As much as there may be subjects that we feel are taboo in our society, we no longer live in a small, confined society of our own homes. Yeah, despite the fact that we are all sort of locked down in our homes, our kids are confined to online learning, they are actually living in a bigger global world, and the internet has made it such that our children are going to be picking up things from the net. I hope this is not taboo, but let's just give, for example, the whole LGBT situation. Yeah, we can't hide it from our children. They're going to ask questions. Okay, you may want to say to your child, well, okay, this is what it's about, but maybe in Malaysia or in our family, we don't agree with this, or according to our religion, this is what the holy book says, etc. Yeah. We can maybe put forward our views, our own justifications, but I think it's important to allow children to make their own minds up. And for me, reading is knowledge. And if we look at it that way, and at the end of the day, if you say a person who reads something is going to get influenced entirely by that, that's not so true in children who are going to schools, who are living in communities. Children who are going to be influenced entirely by what they read are often socially isolated children who are being rejected by the society that they live in. And so we then need to look at how do we correct that? Yeah. If you take, for example, shooting incidences in America, often the blame is pointed at, oh, the parents allowed this child to view things online. The parents also had guns in their home. But what about the schools that these children attended? What made them have to resort to just befriending people online and not others in school? So we also have to look at that. Yeah,
you want to look at the whole environment, a child's social environment particularly. Yes. Lee Sin, how have you dealt with it when you have come across books with the racial stereotypes, as you mentioned, or that depict graphic depictions of violence? You know, how do you talk to your kids about it?
I like what Dr. Rajini said. You know, I think we, even if we don't agree with everything we see or read, I think we have to help the child acknowledge that it exists. You know, the world is very diverse and these things exist whether or not we are in line with it or not. And I think that's very important. And I also, when I see these kind of things, I don't keep it away. I don't censor it. I feel like the child needs to go through the process of sort of like absorbing and sort of looking at it themselves, and then we discuss it. Because I think if you rob the child of having that first-hand experience of processing it, then you are just imposing your own bias towards the child. You're not giving the child an opportunity to learn and process in their own mind. For example, you know, you can draw an analogy with like a child wearing a shoe. It's faster for the parent to wear the shoe, but if I keep wearing your shoe for you, you'll never learn how to wear your shoe. So in the same way, I think cognitive processes, you have to give the child opportunity to respond to a situation. But then you kind of, maybe you want to guide a little bit if the child is younger, you know, what are the pros and cons, and then try to come to a kind of decision. Because my child has come through with this gender stereotyping, My Little Pony. He used to love my son. He loved My Little Pony. And then he used to want to read all the My Little Pony books. So I buy for both of them. And then one day he wanted to buy My Little Pony Tupperware. And the Tupperware, he brought it to school. And of course, he was made fun of and he didn't want to use it anymore. But we had to discuss it because I told you, it's these are the kind of things some children don't understand, that there's nothing for girls and boys. It's for everyone. But you know, children, he had to go through it to learn that this happens. And then after that, he made a decision, okay, I'll keep using it. It's okay. I like it. You know, kind of thing.
Yeah. So would you ever resort to having to ban a book from your household, do you think?
I think only if he has this very, like I told you, graphical images and maybe overtly mature, maybe kind of sexual content that is not appropriate. But I don't think I would totally ban like this kind, but the things that I said, like, you know, the stereotype and typing thing, I would talk through it because it will exist everywhere. You can't keep banning all the books you see. There is a lot of books like that in the market. Yeah.
So, Dr. Rajini, your kids are older, so you have the benefit of that perspective as well, right? And banning something for an older child or a teenager is equivalent to saying, read it.
Yes.
What advice can you offer?
I was just going to say that. It's the same with toddlers or even preschoolers.
Any child, really.
The more you say no, the more they're going to be curious. And I think sometimes the authorities, they don't understand child development. When we see headlines in our newspapers saying, you know, this book is banned, or it actually drives curiosity amongst a lot of people. What decisions they come to it at the end of the day is, of course, going to be influenced by what their peers or society says, etc. But it actually drives people to go and look for it. It's like saying you censor things. What do people do now? They go and try and find the uncensored versions online. So the more you say no, the more you're going to stop them. I mean, we've never had that issue where we've had to ban them. I mean, I still remember when, you know, my cousins are that much older than me. And I remember one of, you know, they used to have Mills and Boons in their house when we still had Enid Blyton in ours and we were neighbors. And I still remember, you know, sneakily looking at Mills and Boons because my aunt used to say, oh, that's not for you, read the Enid Blyton. But I used to sneakily open it and, you know, read it. And you know, after, you know, but by the time I was their age, I don't think it ever really interested me. But, you know, I still remember going to bookshops with, secondhand bookshops with my friends, and they were like, hey, let's go to the Mills and Boons corner. You know, I was never allowed to buy that at home. So I think you got to have open discussions. Of course, every family has different sets of social rules. There may be certain things that you don't want to. One thing we didn't encourage our kids with to do is to, I mean, I have girls, so maybe violence was never really featured. But, you know, I would, like Lisian, not want to have graphic images, etc. But I would say, for example, I see a lot of children with developmental disabilities. And as Lisian says, sometimes, you know, what they watch, for example, cartoons, they relate to them. So then when the parents buy them the comic, it encourages them to read. Well, that's great. Even if you start reading with comics, and even if it's a comic that's based on something on the TV, that's reading. And reading has so many more positive benefits than negative. So when people, you know, like this whole debacle with Dr. Seuss and his own thoughts, etc. How many of us ever looked at that when we bought those books for our children? Yeah, I mean, if we dig up things about anyone, we're going to find something that didn't agree with us. Maybe it was not his fault, I don't know. But some of his books have helped so many children.
But I guess what occurred to me as I was looking at these Dr. Seuss books in question was that with time and with awareness, we become more sensitized towards perhaps certain depictions that are judgmental or prejudiced against others. And with that view as parents, then we can talk to our kids about it. But yes. Lisian, just very quickly, we don't have much time left, but you did say also how you try to introduce books that you want your kids to read and try to you know, sneak it into their bookshelves perhaps. What would be important for you when it comes to ensuring that what they read has diversity of characters as well, perhaps not just race and gender, but even ability perhaps?
Yeah, I try to make sure my library is very diverse. So my library is the kind of utopian world I want to see, you know. So I want
to... We can see it behind you right now on the Zoom screen.
Yeah, this is my adult library. Yeah, so the... usually we I recently I found they started learning Mandarin also, and I found a supplier of Chinese books who supplies books, picture books of in Chinese, a lot of them translated from Japanese, so the characters are Asian. So I find some representation for my children so that they don't only see a lot of Western characters. And then recently I found another supplier that supplies books relating to Tamil and Indian culture, a lot of Hindu kind of culture. So that they at least they are exposed to a variety of things, you know, and of course we try to look at some current topics. Sometimes things in the news, if we see, we link it back to the news, and of course we link it also back to the child's current interests. We try to always find, usually you can find a good picture book relating to something the child likes, you know, even if the child is currently reading a book you're not really into at the moment. Yeah.
So yeah. What I find is it's quite difficult, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lee Sien, to find books that normalize depictions of children who are not typically developing or who just have different abilities. I find that very often it sort of just tries too hard, and then
yes.
it doesn't become something that kids enjoy because it's got to, at the end of the day, speak to them. Have you yes. come across anything that you would recommend?
Yes, actually, there are a few I would recommend. There's one called Captain Starfish. It's about a child who is unusually shy. I don't know whether you've seen that. It's about a boy who just doesn't want to perform in the concert, doesn't want to go to the party. And it was like my son, it was a little bit like that. And when he read it, he really related to it. So I found sometimes if you look, there can be some books like that. And regarding Dr. Seuss, I wanted to share a small story I heard in a podcast. By a evolutionary biologist. He actually, he was a bit anti-Japanese. He was racist in the beginning. But later on, after that, he made a trip to Japan after the war, and he met some people. And then after that, if you look at Horton Hears a Who, there's a dedication to a Japanese friend. So actually, he changed, you know. So the podcast is how interesting. He was showing children, he wanted to show children that to embrace diversity through the book Horton Hears a Who. And it was part of his own awakening as a person who was a bigot and then later went to another country and changed his own worldview on it. So I think, you know, sometimes these banned things, we have to look at the things that happen in the context of the author's life also.
All right. That's really interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I'll send you the link.
All right. So just perhaps to wrap up, some final tips from each of you when it comes to making sure that as a parent, you are still involved as much as you can at every stage, appropriately, of course, at every stage of your child's development, to be involved in their reading journey. Perhaps, Lee Sien, we could start with you.
I would say have the bedtime ritual of reading, you know, the 10 to 15 minutes every night with the three books. And then the one book can be something they choose on their own, and the other one book is, and then another book you choose together. I feel like that time allows us to not only read, but discuss things and things that happen during the day. And we can relate them back to issues and also the books that we read.
And you're still doing that at this age?
Yeah, I'm still doing that. I hope to do that for a very long time to come. Now we're even reading chapter books
at night. Fantastic. Yeah. And Dr. Rajini?
Keep reading because parents always ask me, can I stop reading once my child can read on their own? And we sort of made that mistake. Not intentionally, but, you know, having moved back from the UK with our little busy lives, we sort of focused on reading to the younger one, forgetting that our six-year-old still needed reading. And she, for a little while, she lost that you know, little spark of wanting to read. But I think, you know, keep reading, make reading fun, make it a family habit because it has so much benefit in the long term, both cognitively, in your child's own reading abilities, self-confidence, etc. And if there are anything that strikes you as being controversial, take it positively. Something that we can discuss. Something that we, as a family, can, you know, air our opinions about. Because healthy discussion is always better than suppressing things.
All right. Fantastic. I've been speaking today to Dr. Rajini Saravanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, as well as Chu Lee Sien, a parent of 8-year-old twins. And they've been sharing, you know, how we as parents can guide our children in choosing reading material. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.